Hi, I'm Norm Shealy. NormShealy.com. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us a friend of mine who is a physician here in Atlanta, Dr. Jerry Rehart. He's a OBGYN. We're going to talk about bioidentical hormones. How are you, Jerry?
I'm doing fine.
Thanks for coming on tonight. I appreciate it, and I know my listeners will. So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, and you don't actively see patients anymore, do you?
No, I closed my active practice the first of the year, but I'm still doing some surgery, assisting other physicians, so I'm still in gynecology, but I don't have an ongoing practice.
And
I'm semi-retired.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
And your passion is bioidentical hormones?
Well, hormones. My passion is hormones, generally bioidentical type, yeah.
And what is... Tell me what got you started there. I mean, what moved you toward that to begin with before we get started with the interview?
Well, I just saw the advantages of hormones, what they did for women who started them back when I was in training back in the 70s and 80s. Women who took hormones had less disease, and they seemed to stay younger. And as time went on, we were giving them to more and more women for all kinds of reasons. The primary reason was hot flashes. But then the more we studied hormones, the more the other benefits came out, and we learned more and more about the benefits of hormones.
Now, I know that hormones in general have controversy that surround them. What are those controversies talking about? I'm just going to let you talk so I don't have to put words in your mouth. And
well, I invite you to put words in my mouth, but I'll be glad to talk. The biggest controversy is the risk of breast cancer. And there was a large research project sponsored by the National Institutes of Health and supported by the Wyeth Pharmaceutical Company, which manufactures Premarin and Prempro. And that study was designed to show the wonderful benefits of hormones, but it wasn't designed very well. And the study went on for 5, 6, 7 years. And in 2002, the preliminary results came out, and they showed that hormones, to their surprise, had a lot of negative effects that they didn't expect. They showed that it caused more heart disease. Some of the women who took hormones, the women who took the combination of Premarin and Provera, the so-called Prempro, had more breast cancer. The women had more blood clots in their legs, more blood clots in their lungs. And actually, it even showed they had more Alzheimer's. Now, this was contrary to everything that we thought, except for perhaps the blood clots. We always knew that women who took hormones had a slight increased risk of blood clots. Blood clots not being fatal, it was an acceptable risk. Women who took birth control pills, we always knew, had a slight increased risk of blood clots. But the advantages of birth control pills, you know, outweighed that slight risk. So we accepted some slight risk for the advantages of hormones.
What, is it metastatic breast cancer or just a general, I don't know what the different kinds are. But.
I didn't finish. But the PREM, to go back to the results of the Women's Health Initiative, which was the big research project, which is abbreviated to WHI, it came. The initial results came out in July of 2002, and it was a study of 16,000 women. 8,000 4,000 took Premarin, and 4,000 took placebo, and 4,000 took Prempro, and 4,000 took placebo to be compared to the Prempro group. Now, the women who took Prempro had 26% more breast cancer. The women who took Premarin, which was lost by the media, had 24%, not more, but less breast cancer. So the women who took Premarin, which was the estrogen, it seemed to protect them from breast cancer. The women who took the combination of the estrogen and the progestin, Premarin and Provera, had more breast cancer. So in one sense, the hormones increased breast cancer, in the other sense, it reduced breast cancer. But the media played up the increase in breast cancer so much that 50% of the women in the United States stopped taking their hormones despite all the other advantages of hormones.
All right. Now I have a question about the progesterone. Is it any progesterone or just that the pharmaceutical progesterone or whatever it was that you said?
Yes. Provera, well, let's go to the term bioidentical. Provera is not a bioidentical progestin. A progestin is a group, and Provera is in that group, and progesterone is in that group. So they are ingredients of the group progestin. And Provera is a synthetic, non-bioidentical progestin. It's chemically created by a pharmaceutical inventor. Progesterone, on the other hand, is the progesterone or the progestin created by the body, created by the woman's ovaries, which has been around for 1.5 billion years. The estrogen and the progesterone have been around for over 1 billion years. And they have been selected out through evolution as valuable chemicals in the body. But the Provera, which is the chemical that seemed to create or cause the increase in breast cancer, is a synthetic chemical that was manufactured by a pharmaceutical company. Go ahead.
No, I'm just listening. Go ahead and finish.
I'm finished.
Okay. So if they want, why would they need to take a progesterone, and why would they need to take an estrogen, and then we'll break off from there?
Well, that's a good question. Now, it's been known for years that women who took estrogen got all the benefits of the menopausal hormones. In fact, the first estrogen that was invented came out in 1942, and that was Premarin. And the women who took the Premarin primarily took it because of hot flashes. But over the years, the way it was always known, even before 1942, that women seem to develop heart attacks and heart disease about 10 years after men. A man has an incidence of a heart attack at the age of 40, 41, and 42, equivalent to a woman's incidence of heart attacks at the age of 50, 51, and 52. The curve starts to go up in men at around 40, they start getting heart attacks. In women, they start getting heart attacks in 50. Just by coincidence, 50 is the age of menopause. So some smart guy many years ago kind of thought, well, maybe if it occurs at the time of menopause, and menopause is when a woman stops making her estrogen, maybe that estrogen was preventing the heart disease. And they did research, and a lot of research prior to WHI showed that the women who took hormones had 30 to 40% less heart disease than the women who didn't take hormones, because women were taking hormones from the 40s all the way up to 2002 and even up till today.
Mm-hmm.
And the women who start hormones at the time of menopause have always had a 30 to 40% less chance of having a heart attack from taking the estrogen.
So let me answer your
question about the progestin. The women who have a uterus, well, actually, it took about 20 or 30 years for them to realize that if all you took was Premarin, which is only the estrogen, that's not natural. It's not natural only to take an estrogen, because a woman normally has estrogen in her body all the time, but a menstrual cycle is 4 weeks, and the second 2 weeks of the four-week cycle, she produces progesterone. The progesterone affects the lining of the uterus in combination with the effect of the estrogen, and it causes what's called a secretory endometrium. And then at the end of 4 weeks, the progesterone stops suddenly, and the lining of the uterus comes out. It sloughs out along with blood, and that's the menstrual cycle. So every month, a woman has her uterus cleaned out. That's the natural way, which is, in general, the natural way is the best way. Now, when women started taking Premarin in menopause, they didn't know anything about this need for cleaning out the uterus. And what happened was there was this continuous stimulation to the lining of the uterus, and the lining of the uterus never got sloughed out. It got thicker and thicker and thicker, and it led to some problems. It led to bleeding, which doctors were first aware of, and then it led to hyperplasia, which is a pre-malignant condition, and then it led to cancer. So women who only took Premarin back in the 40s and 50s and 60s started getting more uterine cancer. So then they discovered, some naturalist types of doctors said, well, let's try to follow nature and add the progestin, which seems to prevent the uterine cancer. So we started giving the estrogen all the time, but 2 weeks a month, you would add a progestin. And the progestin that was the best absorbed at that time of all the progestins that were invented, and there weren't that many, but Provera was like the best one. So they started giving a woman estrogen all the time, and 2 weeks of each 4 weeks, they would take the Provera, stop the Provera, and have a menstrual period, clean out the uterus, and that prevented the uterine cancer from developing. But that was only necessary in women who had a uterus. If a woman had a hysterectomy, she would never have to take the Provera. So that's the answer to your question about why women took the Provera.
Now that made me think of some other questions. I have three questions here, and I want to ask you, but you don't have to answer them right away. I just don't want to forget, okay?
Sure.
I want to know about four questions, actually. The role that testosterone plays in women and men, you know, heart disease and urinary incontinence. I want to know, what birth control do you recommend for young people today that's not going to cause all of these carcinogenic problems and breast cancer problems and, you know, hyperplasia and bleeding? What should they do? And then I want to know about DHEA.
One question at a time. All right, what's your
Let's
favorite?
Talk about the kids and birth control pill. I mean,
birth control.
What do they do that won't cause them cancer when they get my age?
The FDA wouldn't allow birth control that's going to cause cancer.
Right, uh-huh.
I mean, the birth control pills have the estrogen and the progestin in them. They take, every day, they take a birth control pill that has both chemicals in it, and the progestin prevents the cancer. So I wouldn't worry about cancer. Now, it's always been known that women who take birth control pills, especially in the beginning, the birth control pills came out around 1960,
mm-hmm.
and they were about 10 times stronger than what we take today. And over the years, they kept making them weaker and weaker and weaker to make them safer and safer and safer. But in the beginning, there were a lot of blood clots in the legs because hormones tend to increase clotting, but only if you take them a certain way. We can talk about that later.
Oh, I have a question here. I took Low Overall. What was
mm-hmm.
that?
Well, Low Overall is a very good pill.
It gave me cancer.
No, Low Overall can't give you cancer. What
did.
Kind of cancer did you think it gave you?
Uterine cancer. I had hyperplasia, and then I got
Low Overall. If you took 1,000 women on nothing and 1,000 women on Low Overall, I guarantee you the women on nothing would have more uterine cancer than the women on Low Overall. Low Overall is a preventative. The progestin in Low Overall is called norgestrel. It's one of the most potent progestins, and it's one of the strongest anti-cancer progestins. So it would tend to protect you from uterine cancer.
So something else gave me the cancer.
Now, did you have the kind of cancer with an abnormal pap smear?
At one time I did.
Well, that's a different kind. That's cancer of the cervix.
Okay.
But the cancer of the lining of the uterus, which is really what the birth control pill affects, and these menopausal hormones effect, would be reduced by taking Low Overall. Now, cancer of the cervix is due to, you know, HPV, viruses, and things. And the hormones may contribute, the birth control pill hormones may contribute slightly to cervical cancer. But
okay.
I think all of them the same. I wouldn't blame them on Low Overall.
Okay, so our daughters are going to be okay if we give them
birth control
pills nowadays? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, the probably the safest form of birth control. And with the best good side effects would be the Mirena IUD. Now, the Mirena IUD has progestin in the IUD, but it's only, you know what an IUD is, an intrauterine device?
Mm-hmm.
It sits inside the uterus.
Okay.
It has very little effect on the body because very little of the progestin gets into the blood, and it just affects the uterus, and it reduces and sometimes even stops the menstrual periods, menstrual pain, and all that. So the Mirena is one of the best forms of birth control.
What about all the women who have thickening of the uterus, heavy bleeding? What do they need?
The Mirena is wonderful for that, actually. But, I mean, a lot of those women...
Adenomyosis. What do they take?
Well, birth control pills reduce bleeding, reduce cramping and pain.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all good, but the Mirena is probably one of the best. A lot of women have a choice between a hysterectomy or a Mirena IUD.
Really?
A lot of times they get a Mirena IUD and they don't need a hysterectomy.
So why do they do that to begin with? I mean, why do our, you know, 16, 18, 20-year-old girls have flowing, you know, traumatic blood loss and fibroids and cysts? What's causing it?
Well, fibroids, you're talking about something else. Well, fibroids is a common tumor. And from my reading, at the age of 50, 75% of women have at least a small fibroid when they do ultrasounds on women who are 50 years old. So it's abnormal not to have a fibroid at the age of 50. So it's very common. It's a very common, benign, not cancer tumor.
What are they, though?
They're just...
Is it hormone-related?
Yes, they're related. The hormones tend to stimulate them, but the hormones by themselves, which every woman, you know, has pretty much the same hormones, mm-hmm. every woman having menstrual cycle, but they don't all get fibroids. It's more of a genetic thing than anything else. African-American women, I think at the age of 50, have about an 80% chance of having fibroids, and Caucasian women have about a 70% chance of having fibroids. This is from an article that I read. So that everybody gets them, but African-American women have slightly more fibroids than white women.
Does that have anything to do with all the products and soaps and lotions and makeups and milk and, yeah.
In the food? I don't know. I would tend to say no. And the reason is because if you are 20, 30, 40 years old, your body's making so much estrogen that a little bit in the food's not going to make a difference, I would guess. This really hasn't been studied. On the other hand, if you're a young girl who's 7 or 8 years old and your body's making no estrogen, a little bit of estrogen in the food, and I'm just, you know, saying this because it seems logical, not that I have any proof of this, it might make a difference in someone who has zero estrogen. But if your body's loaded with estrogen because you're a 30 or 40-year-old woman, a little bit in the food I don't think is going to make any difference whatsoever.
Okay. All right, let's get back to the testosterone question. What role does testosterone, and where does that play in women's hormones?
Well, testosterone is manufactured a little bit by the ovary, but more of it's manufactured by the adrenal gland. Now, a lot of times when a woman goes into menopause, her estrogen and progesterone drops off, and a lot of times the testosterone doesn't drop off for 3 or 4 years. So she has a sort of she'll be a testosterone dominant for several years. Now, testosterone affects the libido. It increases a woman's sex drive and a man's as well. But that's the main benefit of testosterone. Too much testosterone, which you get from over-treatment or from a tumor can secrete testosterone, then you may start having bodily changes like extra. First usually it starts with a bad case of acne, and then mm-hmm. you start getting a lot of hair on your body, and that's a sign of excessive testosterone.
Okay. So what about, let's go back to estrogen and progesterone for just a minute.
Yes.
When women want to lose weight, when we start putting on body fat, belly fat, what is that telling us?
Well, belly fat is a sign of menopause. I believe, and this is, I read this in many different books and articles, estrogen tends to cause a person, and it's always a woman because women make lots of estrogen, to accumulate fat cells in their buttocks and their upper thighs, which is what a woman looks like. Women have larger buttocks than men. Testosterone, when you lose your estrogen, your buttocks sometimes get smaller. A lot of this is hypothetical, but it's in all the books. You don't really see it. It's a very slow process. You know, it might take several years for it to happen. But over years of less estrogen, the fat cells tend to migrate from the buttocks to the abdomen. And I don't have any real live examples of this, but from what I read, the women lose their buttocks and they get a bigger stomach, and I always equated the buttocks with good cholesterol and the stomach with bad cholesterol. So you go from good cholesterol to bad cholesterol. Men who make a lot of testosterone tend to get more of a big stomach. So the estrogen is buttocks, less estrogen is smaller buttocks and more in the stomach, and more testosterone kind of puts it in the stomach. So too much testosterone, and some women are treated with testosterone, and in small amounts, it's very safe, has a lot of benefit. But in large amounts, it can have, other than the side effects of too much hair and acne, it can affect the cholesterol, the lipids, the triglycerides, and it can affect the shape of the body. It can cause an increased fat in the abdomen.
Is estrogen dominance have anything to do with your thyroid, or is there any connection between estrogen and thyroid issues, hypothyroidism?
Yes, there is. First of all, there's a thing called thyropause, where a woman goes through menopause, a woman goes through thyropause. Now, about 100% of women go through menopause. I guess, let's say 100%. Not all women go through thyropause, but when they get into their 40s and 50s and 60s, their thyroid function tends to dip off. And I have read that about 10% of women who hit menopause around the age of 50 are hypothyroid. And a lot of that had to do with just getting older. Their thyroid function gets weaker, just like the ovarian function gets weaker as you get older. Another factor comes in when you consider how you take your estrogen in a woman who is taking estrogen therapy. Now, there's two ways to take estrogen therapy. One is oral, take it by mouth. And one is transdermal. You take it across your skin or across the skin of the vagina through a cream, a suppository, or a vaginal ring. But it goes across the skin rather than into your stomach. Now, when you take a pill into your stomach, like an estrogen pill, the estrogen goes right to the liver in a very large quantity, like within an hour or two. When you have it across your skin, it trickles in all day long at a steady state. So there's never like a big gush of the estrogen. Well, this big gush or bolus of the estrogen that goes to the liver causes the liver to do some not unnatural things. And one of the things it does, it raises a chemical in the blood called thyroid globulin hormone. Now, that thyroid globulin hormone attaches to the thyroid in your blood and makes the thyroid less bioavailable or less available to the tissue. So when some women, this isn't very often, but when they start taking estrogen by mouth, they become hypothyroid.
What about...
And that can be prevented by taking estrogen transdermally. And by transdermal, I mean what I said, through across the skin. And across the skin can be a patch, or a cream, or a lotion, or a spray, or a gel. And those are the commonest ways that women get the transdermal. In the vagina is not as common.
Is estrogen dominance from whatever reason and hypothyroidism connected? Are there any symptoms that we should look for?
Estrogen dominance not from taking it orally, which is, I think, what you're referring to. You're just
if you're not taking anything,
yeah,
that you have estrogen dominance for whatever reason. Are there any symptoms that you could get regarding your thyroid that should alert you that your thyroid's not working right and you should
Well, I mean, the normal symptoms of hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism. But I don't know how a natural estrogen dominance would affect the thyroid. I don't know that I would blame it on the estrogen. I would just call it a coincidence.
Okay. Let's see, my next question. Progesterone, is it thermogenic? And does it have any relationship with insulin and belly fat?
Progesterone?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read that it has a lot to do with insulin and belly fat, but estrogen does. The primarily the oral estrogen and the bolus, the first pass through the liver or getting the large bolus to the liver, can affect insulin and glucose metabolism.
Okay.
And included in the advantages of estrogen, which has actually didn't come out initially when that WHI research came out. But after the WHI study, a lot of people have reanalyzed the data. In fact, over 100 articles have come out using the data from the WHI. And one of the things they found was that women who take estrogen in menopause have a lower incidence. In fact, it's a 12% lower incidence of developing a new case of diabetes after if they're taking estrogen compared to someone who's not taking estrogen.
Okay, so why would we want to take... The reason I'm asking all this about progesterone is because I get all these books in the mail, you know, from people pro-progesterone. So I want to know, why is the big hype
books
around pro-progesterone?
You know, I don't know. You know, there's two different schools of thought. One is like conventional medicine that you're taught in medical school, and one is alternative medicine. The conventional medicine in medical school teaches us that the progesterone prevents the buildup of the lining of the uterus, and you give it to women who have a uterus who are taking estrogen. But all of that other stuff about progesterone, I never learned that in medical school, and I'm really not an expert at it.
Okay.
And I don't know. I don't know if it's all real or not. Maybe it is.
All right. What about, what can you tell me about DHEA?
DHEA is a chemical that is natural. It can be measured in a man or a woman. And it also is considered by the FDA as a food supplement, so it doesn't require a prescription. You can buy it in any health food store. And it is a weak testosterone, but nevertheless it's a testosterone, so it can give you some testosterone effects. It can increase your libido. And when you swallow it, some of the DHEA is converted to testosterone, and some of the DHEA is converted to estrogen. So you get a kind of a double effect. So if you take too much of it, you may start getting some of those testosterone effects I mentioned, like acne mm-hmm. and an extra hair on your body. If you take some of it and don't get any side effects, it's probably safe. Theoretically, testosterone could affect your risk of heart disease before it causes acne and hair on your face. But probably, if you don't get acne, it's probably safe. If you take it in moderation.
What about the hormone melatonin?
Melatonin. I don't know that much about melatonin. I know it helps you sleep.
Okay. I won't make you talk about that then.
yeah, I don't know that much.
All right. So let's talk a minute about the differences in bioidentical hormones and the synthetic hormones. What is the difference? And natural hormones. What is the difference between those three? And I'd also like for you to talk about the three different kinds of estrogen. Why would you choose one estrogen over the other? Which one is dangerous and which one is safe?
Okay, well, there's three bioidentical estrogens. One is approved by the FDA, and two of them aren't. The estradiol is a bioidentical estrogen. Any menopausal estrogen treatment has estradiol in it. Now, there's two other estrogens that we recognize from the ovaries, estrone and estriol. Those are weaker estrogens. And the leading scientists in America feel that if you get estradiol, you don't need estrone and estriol. But a lot of physicians feel the combination is better. So they have drugs called Biest and Triest that have two or three of those estrogens in them. But I don't think there's any strong research or strong evidence that you need more than estradiol to get the benefits of the estrogen.
So estradiol would be the best. What about the other two?
Well, if you go to a...
some people don't realize that there are three different kinds of estrogen. So can you tell us?
Right. I think most people don't. And most gynecologists aren't really interested in three different kinds of estrogens because there's very little scientific research showing that you need estrone and estriol. Now, that doesn't mean there's not a lot of opinion of people saying you need estrone and estriol, but there's very little scientific research. Now, WHI, which I keep referring to, was a multi-million dollar research project sponsored and initiated by the National Institutes of Health. This is a bad example. All they looked at was Premarin. They didn't even look at estradiol. The thing is, they sort of equate all these estrogens as having the same benefit, whether you take Premarin, whether you take estradiol, whether you take estrone, or whether you take estriol. If it gets rid of your hot flashes, you're probably getting enough to get the benefits of the estrogen. And you know, and there's no evidence that you need a combination of these estrogens to get more benefit than just one of them. In fact, there's very little evidence that that estradiol has benefits that Premarin doesn't have. The thing about Premarin, it's not very it's not nice the way they collect it from these pregnant horses. But other than that, the Premarin has the same benefits, as far as the research goes, in preventing heart disease, in actually preventing breast cancer. Like I say, WHI showed the women who just took Premarin had less breast cancer. In preventing vaginal dryness, in preventing osteoporosis, Premarin and estradiol are equivalent. Now, estrone and estriol are much weaker than estradiol. So I don't think anyone would take estrone or estriol by themselves, but if you mix it with estradiol, you probably don't need the estrone or estriol. Estrone or estriol. This is my opinion, and it may not be right, but I think you can be very healthy just using the estradiol, which is what is in most of the pharmaceutical treatments for menopause, like the Climera patch, the Vivel patch, or the Vivel dot, or the Estroderm, the lotions, the sprays. There's many different ways to get estrogen into your body.
What about the progesterone? We were talking the other day about creams versus patches, and what are those little things that they're inserting into people, those little capsule things?
Okay, the
how do you, implants? What are those things?
Well, they're the same chemicals that we're talking about. They're bioidentical. And I think they're good. They're probably more expensive, and they probably give you a higher level of estradiol than a lot of people, especially internal medicine doctors, would be comfortable with. When you use a patch, and if you're checking blood levels, you generally want to get the estradiol level up above 50. But from what I understand from physicians who do the Sotopelli, these hormone implants, when they do that, the estradiol level goes up to 150. Now, personally, I've never read that there's any risk to having a higher estradiol level, and it's probably more similar to what a woman had when she was 30 and 40 years old. But there's just a general fear in this country or perhaps in the world of too much estrogen is harmful. So, and the FDA always says use the smallest dose for the shortest time and all this kind of stuff that a lot of people disagree with. So I think the implants are good, but they're totally not FDA sanctioned or approved or controlled. And there's a couple negatives when the FDA doesn't oversee something. And some of them aren't so important. But one of them is when they oversee a drug, the drug is required to give certain literature with it, the insert that goes with the drug, which gives you warnings about the drug, gives you a black box warning, say, watch for these things. When you go to a compounding pharmacy or if you get an implant, you get none of those warnings because the FDA really is out of the picture. It's just between you and the doctor. And another advantage of using the FDA-approved bioidentical hormones is that your insurance might help you pay for it. And anything that's not FDA-approved, insurance companies don't contribute to the payment.
Or alternative. You know me, I'm a big pro-alternative person. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think alternative is good, but you got to accept its disadvantages. I mean, I'm not opposed to the implants.
I'm just starting, and typically, you know, I like it to be natural, whatever it is, and insurance companies don't pay for that natural thing that you want to do.
But the hormones that you get in the patch are natural.
Are they? Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
They're bioidentical. And I equate natural with bioidentical.
Okay. So let me ask you this question. When we're talking about levels of hormones, is it the level that's important? You need to be above 50. Or whatever it is, or is it the ratio between the other hormones, and let's say the ratio between estrogen and progesterone that matters, or is it being at that number? Does that make sense?
Yeah. There's a school of thought about ratios, but I don't think there's good research on the ratios. I think the research is mainly on the levels of the estradiol, and even more important than the levels are the symptoms. But the levels are important. I've read that if you get a level above 50, it'll prevent osteoporosis. But more important than that is do the hot flashes go away? And if you get a level above 50, usually the hot flashes go away. But some women, they don't. They have to go above 100 to get rid of the hot flashes.
Okay,
and that's probably one of the most important things, to get rid of the hot flashes. Some women are miserable because of the hot flashes, and other women never get hot flashes. You know, 20 or 30% of women aren't bothered by hot flashes.
Okay, let's talk about, now that you bring up hot flashes again, let's talk about urinary incontinence, bone loss, and these hot flashes. Are we treating symptoms when we get rid of the hot flashes, or are we treating the cause of it? Are these problems...
We're treating the cause of the hot flashes. You know, if you want to bring up urinary incontinence, that's a whole different subject. And if you want to talk about osteoporosis, yeah, we're treating the cause of the osteoporosis. Women get osteoporosis when they stop making estrogen. Estrogen prevents osteoporosis. There's these cells that break down the bones, osteoclasts. There's these cells that produce new bone, osteoblasts. And the estrogen feeds the osteoblasts and inhibits the osteoclasts.
Okay, where does calcium and vitamin D, where is that role with bone loss?
Well, they're the building blocks. And it's good to have building blocks, but your body always has calcium. But it's nice to have an excess of calcium. If you're building a house, it's nice to have an excess of bricks. But if you still have bricks all over the place, let's say. So I take calcium every morning. I take 2,000 milligrams of calcium every morning because it's Tums and it tastes good and it can't hurt me.
Wait,
and
you take Tums?
Yeah. Tums is a cheap...
You take that for your calcium supplement?
Yeah, calcium carbonate. It's
and is it, do you think... I don't.
Probably as good as anything else.
Calcium carbonate... Hold on, let's address this. I thought that calcium carbonate wasn't very absorbable, that form of calcium.
I haven't read that. And then I take 3,000 units of vitamin D every morning.
Okay.
With my calcium and my other supplements.
Now, does that Tums affect your stomach?
But I think the most important thing for the osteoporosis is the estrogen. The estrogen is the worker bee, but it you know, it's nice to have that calcium floating around.
Okay, so when you, I knew a lady that I used to work with that started taking the estrogen for her bone loss, and she got metastatic breast cancer. So are we at risk there if we're starting to do that, take the estrogen for bone loss? I don't have a clue. I'm just asking you this because I've watched this woman.
Now, you know, anybody can get breast cancer. And if you take 1,000 women on estrogen and 1,000 women who aren't on estrogen, some of each group are going to get breast cancer.
What does the research say is the cause of metastatic breast cancer? What is it, a hormone thing or is it a toxic thing? What causes it?
Nobody knows why. It starts with one cell.
Yeah.
And usually there's a genetic change in the chromosomes of a cell. When they look at the chromosomes in the cell, and the normal cell might have, 26 chromosomes. And then when it's mutated and it's acting,
out of control,
the chromosomes are different. The genetic makeup of the cell is different. And that starts with one stinking cell. And it multiplies. And then that multiplies. And it leads to a tumor. And then it can be an aggressive tumor that can be metastatic, or it can be not cancer, just a benign tumor. But it all starts with one cell. So the question is, where did that one cell come from? And most of the gynecology thought leaders feel that estrogen does not initiate breast cancer, but estrogen promotes breast cancer. If you have a breast cancer that has estrogen receptors on it, now first of all, if you have ovaries, you already are full of estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say that. If you're premenopausal and your ovaries are functioning, you're already full of estrogen. And people get breast cancer before menopause.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're postmenopausal and you're taking estrogen, yes, you might be promoting the breast cancer.
Okay.
Now, so it might grow a little faster. And that may cause it to spread more rapidly or less rapidly. Sometimes, there's some cases or studies have shown that the estrogen causes the breast cancer to grow, but not to spread. A lot of studies have shown that women who take estrogen have a 30, this is women say between 50 and 59, have a 30 to 40% lower mortality rate from everything. And
say that again?
Breast cancer. Women between 50 and 59, there was a study, I have it written down in front of me. Excuse me. Yeah, here. Some people do what's called a meta-analysis. Instead of doing a study, they go to the literature and they use Google or Google Scholar, and they get all these studies related to a certain subject they're looking at. And each study might have 1,000 patients in it, which is a pretty large study. But if they get enough studies together, they can have 20,000. Well, one person did a study, and he got 30 combined studies with 27,000 women. Now, I don't know if you appreciate how many women that is. And he saw the women, he compared the women who took estrogen who were less than 60 years old. You know, we're doing a lot of research on women less than 60 years old. And he compared the women who took estrogen and the women who didn't take estrogen. And the women who took estrogen, in this study, it wasn't 30%. It was a 39% reduction in mortality. And mortality is the bottom line. I mean, you know, breast cancer, no breast cancer. You don't want to die.
Do they identify whether it was bio or identical or whether it was synthetic?
I don't think so. No, it probably was everything because it was 30 different studies.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them probably had, a lot of them had Premarin, I'm sure, and a lot of them might have had transdermal and oral and estradiol. But 27,000 women had a 39% reduction in mortality.
All right, Jerry, we've got about 10 minutes left, and I'm going to let you talk about whatever you want to talk about that we haven't already talked about.
Okay, well, let me say something about Alzheimer's.
Oh, okay.
Now, the WHI study in 2002 came out, and they said estrogen increased Alzheimer's. And there again, they were looking at women from 50 to 79. And then later on, they broke it down into three groups, 50 to 59, 60 to 69, and 70 to 79. And they found that most of the Alzheimer's were in women from 75 to 79. And in the women who were 50 to 63, which admittedly there's not, this was described in a lecture I heard recently by Alan Altman, who is a professor at Harvard. And I don't know how many cases of Alzheimer's actually show up between age 50 and 63. But he was impressed by this, and it's called the Mirage Study, if anyone wants to look it up. But the incidence of Alzheimer's was reduced by the women who took estrogen 65%, which is about the biggest number I've mentioned here today. So it seems that the women in WHI who were 75 to 79 actually started taking the hormones at that age, 75 to 79 or above after 65, because the study went on 5 to 7 years, so they might have taken it at 68 and got into age 75 and they got Alzheimer's. Well, women, we don't give women hormones who are generally over 60 because of various reasons. It's kind of complicated. But women who go into menopause, those are the women who benefit the most from taking hormones. The women who are just becoming deficient in their estrogen ones who benefit, because estrogen is not so good a repairer of disease, but it's a preserver of good function or a preventer of disease, a preventer of aging. It doesn't repair aging so much. Like if you get wrinkles in your skin, it doesn't reverse the wrinkles in your skin and get rid of them so much, maybe a little, but it prevents the wrinkles in your skin. It's a great preventer. So you should start them early.
I'm going to call you and get some for my wrinkles.
I've closed my office. No, but we'll talk.
But that brings up another question now. Allegedly, Alzheimer's seems to be related to low dopamine. Low dopamine. So that makes me wonder, what does estrogen do to dopamine or other neurotransmitters?
Well, I don't know. But estrogen raises serotonin, which is the theory behind fighting depression.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, antidepressants raise serotonin.
Uh-huh.
And I've read that estrogen raises serotonin, but I don't know about dopamine.
Interesting.
It probably has a good effect.
What do people who have low estrogen have any significant psychological difference, like for depression, fatigue, anxiety,
yeah,
or anything?
All of the above, yeah.
They do? Okay.
But not all women. I mean, some women go through menopause, and it's a breeze. But some women get a lot of depression. And what's usually described is that the depression is the worst in the perimenopausal period, maybe from age 48 to 53, let's say. And then they kind of get used to their lower level of estrogen, and they might get over the depression.
Okay.
And a lot of women find that when they get estrogen, they have a lot more energy. And it might be because of sleep. Estrogen helps women sleep. And, of course, if you don't sleep, you don't have energy.
Mm-hmm. All right, you got, about 5 or 6 minutes. What else you want? Anything else you want to address that we haven't?
Well, I got some notes in front of me, and we've kind of covered everything.
I have a question.
But I think whether a woman takes hormone therapy depends on the woman, her history, the family history, how she feels about it. We don't want a woman to take estrogen who's scared to death, you know, because her mother had breast cancer. And she has to weigh the quality of life, the better quality of life she's going to get by getting rid of those hot flashes and sleeping better versus the anxiety she's going to get for taking estrogen because her mother had breast cancer or her sister had breast cancer. But I would advise every woman who's in that situation to give it a trial, you know, take it for 2 months and then stop it and see how you feel when you take it and how you feel when you stop it and see if there's a difference. And I also think the best way to take estrogen and the safest and the most natural is transdermal across the skin or across the vagina, as opposed to the pill, because of what I said about that bolus, the first pass through the liver. And as I said earlier, we generally don't start women on estrogen after the age of 60, or if they're like 10 years after menopause. If a woman goes through menopause at 45, we're kind of scared to start estrogen at 50 after 55.
Why are you scared?
The sooner the better.
In 2 minutes or 1 minute, then less, well, why were you scared? What is it?
Well,
why is it
there
bad
was a
for
doctor,
older women?
Thomas Clarkson, and he took some monkeys. And he and monkeys are very similar to people. And one group he left alone. They just continued to produce their hormones from their ovaries. And the other two groups, he removed their ovaries. Now, one of those groups, this might be too complicated, one of those groups, he gave them hormone pills, and they did the same as the women who had the ovaries. And the other group, he didn't give them hormone pills for 3 years, which they say is equivalent to 6 or 8 years in humans. And then he gave them hormone pills, and he found that the women who didn't have hormones for a period of time, let's say 6, 8, or 10 years, and then got the hormone pills, got into trouble. And
how?
The conclusion was that by staying on the estrogen, you prevent plaque from forming in your coronary arteries. You prevent atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries. Your arteries stay younger and you prevent a heart attack. And if you stay on the hormones, either because of your ovary or if you stay on the hormones because you're taking the pills, you keep those beautiful coronary arteries. Now, if you get off the hormones for, say, 10 years or 8 years, plaque builds up and your arteries get narrower. And then when you take the hormones, especially if you take them by mouth, there's an increase in the clotting factor. And that increased clotting factor plus the buildup of plaque can lead to a heart attack.
Oh, okay.
So that is why a woman who's been off hormones for 10 years or who's over 60, which is sort of equivalent, we're afraid they have some hardening of the arteries. And if we start the hormones then, it might increase the risk of a heart attack. And if you have little mini heart attacks or mini strokes in your brain, and I say I'm talking very mini, it can lead to dementia and Alzheimer's. So we like to, with a woman, to start the hormones right at menopause and keep those arteries nice and clean, the arteries of the heart, the arteries of the brain.
Okay.
And then there's less disease.
That makes sense. Okay. If anybody's interested, I know of 4 books that I've really enjoyed, and you may know some more, but one of them is Slim, Sane, and Sexy by Dr. Jay Mead, who's at John Lee's clinic now. The other one is What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Menopause. Another one is, and that one's by Dr. John Lee. This one's The Miracle of Bioidentical Hormones by Michael Platt. And a new one that's out, just now coming out, by Dr. Pamela Smith, Demystifying Weight Loss, A Concise Guide for Solving Weight Loss with Bioidentical Hormones. So there's some reading if you're interested. Do you know any of you recommend?
Well, I enjoyed Suzanne Summers' book, especially the first half of it. And you know, she's a woman who got breast cancer, researched it, and concluded that it's safe to take hormones after breast cancer. And she took bioidentical hormones after getting breast cancer. And I enjoyed...
I heard that she
book.
Changed her mind, though. Is that I thought she.
Well, I haven't heard that.
That she.
Yeah. Good.
Reneged on that. I don't know.
Email that to me. I'd like to read.
I don't know where I heard it. I just remember somebody telling me that, but I don't. I don't know. But we
I don't
could
know.
Certainly.
And then
anyway.
There's a doctor. I think there's a Dr. Northrup who has a very, very good book on menopause. I forget her first name, but.
If anybody has questions or want to send questions, send them to me, and I'd be glad to email them to Jerry if you have.
Sure.
Any questions you'd like to ask him, evaher@gmail.com. And thanks for listening, and come back sometime, Jerry.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health. You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.